Hey, AfterBuzzers, welcome to the first ever Twin Peaks After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. We are so excited. We're talking about the first and second episode. We obviously have a lot to say, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, you twin freaks. I'm going to call you Twin Freaks because that's what we are. Thank you so much for tuning into our Twin Peaks After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. I'm your host, Sam Davidson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at SamD43. Right here, I have this pretty cool guy. You know, he knows a lot about stuff.
I'll take it. I am Lex Michael. I am dead, yet I live, kids. And I am all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And this awesome person, look at him. Do you like
my Twin Peaks outfit?
Yeah,
I got everything at Horn's department store.
You did it well.
Hey guys, I'm Michael Shirley, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Michael X Shirley.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining. I'm Lisa Mason Lee, and you can find me everywhere at Lisa Mason Lee. Hey, and we're on the live chat. Ask us questions, comment. We're here. We're watching. We want to talk.
We're aficionados.
And, you know, this is a perfect show for us to all talk about it, especially in the live chat. So I couldn't recommend more for people to talk in the live chat and to comment on YouTube when they're watching it. Before we break down this episode, is anyone else feeling, like, super emotional that it's back? And you watched it and you're like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah.
We're striking a nicely emotional tone, or a mellow tone right now, rather, that I feel like is going to gradually implode further into this conversation that we get, because I'm not going to be able to contain myself once we hit certain plot points. Yeah.
I know. You guys, I made an owl noise. What was that?
It literally just
came out of my mouth. I am an owl. What happened? I don't know. What are your guys' pasts with this show?
Oh my gosh. Well, I was basically a little baby, and my mom was watching Twin Peaks, and I can barely remember it, but I remember some of the episodes. She'd be like, okay, you got to go in your room now. She put me away. But anyway, it was an interesting thing to see at that time, you know, when TV wasn't that exciting. I mean, it was exciting, but David Lynch was so edgy at the time, as you guys all know, and it's great to have it back.
Yeah, I found it in college. My best friend in college loved it, and I've always been a huge John Waters fan. So she was like, "You really need to see this David Lynch show." And I was just like, "What in the world did I just watch?" And I just slowly got addicted to it.
I know, it's like a very dark hole that you can get yourself into. Yeah, what about you, Lex?
I found it the better part of a decade ago, and it was at a time where it had been off the air for, I think, over 10 years, and we all assumed that after Fire Walk With Me, that was it. There was to be no more Twin Peaks at all. And as you guys and everybody listening know, the show ends on about the most profound gut punch of a cliffhanger imaginable. And I felt like, I know there's no more of this story, but I can't let this go. So my only outlet for the longest time was to just everybody that I could get to sit down and watch the whole show. I was like, you're going to sit here and you're going to go on this journey with me because I need you to know this pain that I live with every day. And then, you know, also I found the books as well, you know, in the time between
Laura Palmer's Diary. Too.
Yeah, The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer, the autobiography of Special Agent Dale Cooper, My Life, My Tapes, which is way out of print, but if you look hard, you can find it online. And then, of course, super recently, Mark Frost put out The Secret History of Twin Peaks, the first of two novels that are to tie in with this new series, which I read when it came out. I assume I'm going to be going back to it more than once in the weeks to come. But there were a couple of things that came up in this episode tonight where my brain just caught fire. I was like, that's like the book. Oh, my goodness.
And I think specifically they said that Fire Walk With Me was going to be referenced, and that was going to be a big chunk of this show. Rather than referencing season one, season two, it's Fire Walk With Me, which I rewatched last night, and it scared the panties off of me. I'm not even going to...
I just love that. I love it. It's so gritty and
yeah. It was my first time ever watching Fire Walk With Me. I actually watched it last week because I had read that, you know, we should see that before watching this series. So
It fills in, like, everything that you feel like you didn't know.
Yeah, like,
you
know, like the wow, Leo. Laura was wild, wasn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very glad that it seems like in the last handful of years, Fire Walk With Me has undergone this critical reappraisal, because when it first came out...
People booed.
Yeah.
People were mad. And I get that if you loved Twin Peaks and you knew, okay, this is it. This is David Lynch's final statement in the Twin Peaks universe. He's going to answer everything. We're going to find out what happened to Cooper, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's not what he did. And I get why, if all of your hopes were riding on those answers, it was maybe disappointing. I get why maybe it was not initially better received. I think it's, if not his best movie, certainly top three for me personally.
It was freaking awesome.
It's terrifying. It's harrowing. It's deeply upsetting, because it's a story, more so than it's a story about the Twin Peaks mythology, it's a story about trauma and pain and grief and violence, specifically sexual violence. It doesn't let the audience off the hook at any point in the story, which is why I had no clue what to expect from the tone of this show. David Lynch has only become an even more alienating artist since Firewalk. Have you guys seen Inland Empire?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was expecting something a little more in line with Inland Empire. The first thought I had when these two episodes ended was, wow, that was infinitely more coherent than what I was expecting.
I was, what the heck? You know, I think we all had so many different reactions to these two. And it wasn't two episodes exactly. It was a full-on movie.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you know, they say we're going to premiere with two episodes or a two-hour thing. No, this was actually just a full-on two-hour.
They did that with all event. Their season premieres. All the season premieres were 2 hours.
Like, back in the 90s.
Well, the first and second, yeah.
Yes, for season one and season two.
I'm, like, watching it, and I'm like, why is this episode so long?
But I mean, okay, you can't keep... listen, you're in your 30s, right?
Yeah, I'm 31.
So we can't, you know, you were young at that age.
Yeah.
Young-ish. I'm just going to call you out on that. I will say that when I was that age, I had an older brother 13 years older than me, and he liked to terrify me. And this was what started it. And a lot of things came after Twin Peaks, but this was, he was like, watch this, Sammy. He, like, liked to scare me. And so I still have nightmares about Twin Peaks, but then when I rewatched it, it was, like, good nightmares.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I rewatched it as well. I crammed before this, I will admit. And I felt like, wow, I should have seen the whole series years ago, because I felt like it made me feel a little more normal about my own dreams.
Some people don't remember their dreams, and I just love that this show gives a nice shout-out to people that somehow remember their dreams. They're not psychopaths.
Color.
Might be.
Lucid.
Maybe. Well, on that note, let's start to talk about Agent Cooper. And we see him, you know, with our good old friend, the Tall Man.
Are we talking about Doppelganger Dale?
Well, no, we're not talking about Bad Dale yet. We're talking about regular Dale.
This weird monochromatic prologue that we get where it's... Okay, so it seems like, because they're doing the backward speak and he's talking to the giant, that we must be in the lodge somewhere, but this is where my brain starts going like, all right, well, what do these very specific aesthetic choices mean? Why here are we in black and white, where everywhere else in the lodge we're in that full, that classic, the red curtain and the black and white floors? Why, like, minutia, like, why in those other color black lodge scenes is Cooper wearing that pin on his jacket, and why is there no pin in this prologue?
I want to know why the floor is a different color.
You said that.
It's driving me nuts. It's like maroon and white instead of black and white, the little zigzag floor.
But back to the pin, would that by chance... It's not the same color that the ring would be in Fire Walk With Me, right?
No, because the ring was that emerald-looking green thing.
And this was a different color. Because I honestly just rewatched it a couple days ago, so I was thinking I'm ready to see that ring.
I'll be very curious to see where the ring pops up, especially when we know that Fire Walk With Me is supposed to be a big part of what we're going to see in this new series. And then doubly so, because the ring factors into Mark Frost's book quite a bit. The Secret History of Twin Peaks expands the mythology throughout history, going all the way back to the discovery of that region of the country in the Lewis and Clark expedition, where Meriwether Lewis came into possession of that green ring and was eventually driven insane. He died under very mysterious and violent circumstances. The ring passes through history, eventually ends up in Richard Nixon's possession at one point.
I'm gonna have to read this.
This book is mind-bending, and we're going to talk about it. I may tip a little bit of spoilery stuff for the book.
Lexes are gone right here.
As applies specifically to what we're hearing in these two episodes, I will give ample warning if everybody wants to like plug their ears for a second, but it's all speculation and theorizing, so I'll save it for a little bit later. But all of that to say, that ring's got to pop up in some capacity over the next 14 weeks.
Well, having read all that, does the number 430 mean anything to you?
So, okay, so these clues, no idea, but as we know, the giant is the guy, right, who appears to Cooper and gives him these weird cryptic clues. Yeah. In the season 2 premiere, famously, when he's bleeding out on the floor, that's when the giant tells him...
I'm trying to help you, too, he says.
Yeah, there's a man in the smiling bag, right? And the owls are not what they seem, and without chemicals, he points.
Mm-hmm.
They never really figured out what the owl thing meant within the universe of the show.
I think we're supposed to find out now.
Hopefully. Well, but also, there's enough as an audience member where you can speculate. Like, clearly they're vessels for, if not Bob, some of these other spirits. But the characters in universe didn't answer that question for themselves. But the other two clues obviously led them to eventually solving Laura Palmer's murder. So these clues must pay off later in some capacity. But as of this moment, I got nothing.
Well, we have a lot to find out, but we have these new characters that we start, you know, getting introduced to. We get taken to New York City, and I love that they're kind of telling us where we are, and they're taking us all around the country, and they do that throughout the two episodes. So we have, I say the guy in the basement, but it's not. He's above, right?
Yeah, it appears to be.
Yes. So I personally thought that this could be a child of somebody we know.
Yeah, you were. You were like, who is that?
I know. I was like, we know him. His face looks so familiar. But he has, you know, some girl come up or down. Well, both, actually. It doesn't matter where he is. She still goes down.
Oh, I see what you did.
I really loved all that B-roll.
Yeah, a lot of Showtime, you know? I'm like, yeah, Showtime. You got it.
You're talking about the shots, right? City
the
shots?
New York City B-roll was
so beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Lynchian.
And the ambient hiss in the background of like the shots. Have you guys noticed the sound?
Yeah.
The soundscape? Yeah.
I thought that was just our headphones. But
oh, no. No, we should rewatch it like with your own headphones at home and just really take it in.
Well, when I made that pun, I meant that she was going down and they were up, you know?
Oh, I know.
Yes, we get that. So it's these two new characters. We're not really sure who they are, when they are. What did you guys feel about this? Did you think that you knew what was happening at all, or no? Because am I the only one that didn't know what was happening there?
Lex, I had no idea.
What do you think?
No, I did not know exactly what was happening. But before we get to the second episode and in the first episode, it starts to pay off a little bit. But before we even get to that, I saw all of these cameras surrounding this glass box, and the first thing I thought of was the scene in Fire Walk With Me. I believe, the first time we see Dale Cooper, and they're at the Philadelphia field office.
David Bowie?
Yeah.
It's the scene with David Bowie, where Agent Cooper goes out to the hallway, and he stands in front of the camera, walks back to the monitor bank, he's not there. Walks back out, stands in front of the camera again. Walks back to the monitor bank, looks, he's not there. Walks back, stands in front of the camera a third time. At that point, Philip Jeffries enters from the elevator, and when Dale Cooper looks back at the monitor, he is still standing there in that hallway. That was the first thing that I thought of when I saw that camera set up.
I love it. It's a time-space continuum. Yeah. I mean...
I want to know what that box is.
It looks like a teleportation device of some sort.
I'm not going to lie.
And it got deeper?
Yeah.
When he was inside of it, it pushed him back?
It's very scary.
I really liked that.
If I had a superpower, I would do teleportation.
Oh, heck yeah.
But not like that.
No, that looked horrifying.
Yeah, that looked very scary.
You don't want to teleport into that box.
So it kind of changed my mind as far as superpowers that I would have. But we see Ashley Judd. You know?
Yeah, she was one of the first, like, big new names that we get to see.
We see Ashley Judd, but we also see Ben and Jerry Horn.
Of course, oh my of course. Gosh.
Is that what Ben and Jerry came from?
That's what I was thinking.
No, exactly. It's a playoff that. I always figured it was a playoff that.
Well, at least it's a nice callback.
Well, could you guys even recognize Jerry? I mean, he's all bearded. Oh, he's like a pot connoisseur.
Yeah, I have it written right here. Time has been cruel to Jerry Horn.
I thought Jerry Horn has been having so much fun.
He's always had
the time of his life.
The way he entered, even if Ben had not introduced his brother by name, and even if I didn't recognize David Patrick Kelly under the beard, the big, the boisterous, excited, like parade-like way Jerry enters the room, I felt would have been unmistakable. And the fact that he's now running what sounds like a very successful pot business.
Mm-hmm. Legal.
Right. Which is almost the most no-brainer thing to me that happened in these 2 hours tonight was that Jerry went into the pot business. That tracks so perfectly.
I actually liked Jerry. I never did, but now I go, yeah, man.
Right. Jerry was always kind of sketchy. He was seedy. I always was like kind of anxious
around him. And he had the weird, like, hey, the weird voice, don't worry, man. Like, no. But now he's all chill. Yeah. And he's old, and he likes to smoke a lot of weed.
I want
to
see Audrey. I don't know what
you guys. Oh, my God. Can we get Audrey?
I think Audrey was always high. That's my theory. She's really? Just been high all the time.
I've always wanted Coop and Audrey to get together.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yes.
That was apparently a plan at one point during the original run, but in fairness, I think somebody pointed out that he is an agent of the FBI and she is an underage girl.
She's 18.
But wasn't Heather Graham's Annie? Wasn't she underage too?
She was in high school. She got out of the convent.
Yeah, she was maybe on the younger side, but I believe, again, this is all scuttlebutt legal? From 20-something years ago, but I believe part of the reason she was introduced was as an alternative to putting Coop and Audrey together romantically.
I mean, couldn't they just make Audrey a year older?
Seriously, just so we could have satisfaction.
They never even went to high school, like, after Laura dies. They don't even go to high school anymore.
Well, okay, Laura Flynn Boyle, you know, I'm just saying...
Let's not talk about that.
What if she's watching? We can't talk about Laura. Like, hey.
Laura Flynn Boyle, I wish you...
We're just wishing we saw her on the IMDb. Yeah. Like, we wish she was listed as a cast member on
I
the
really
season.
Hate recasting.
Well, you really. Know what? That's more of a reason to talk about her.
Okay,
so
dish it, Sam.
All right, I'm getting into it, guys.
Well, at least Chewit's going to be in here. I mean, it's going to be on the show.
She plays the sister.
So I want to, and Dr. Hayward's going to be in the show.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like we're going to find out. I hope they throw shade at her. They're going to be like, Donna, like, dropped off the earth.
Yeah.
Like,
Donna's a bitch. No, listen, we all love Donna, and it's a character, it's a fake character, so you guys can't get mad at me for calling her a bitch. But I'm just saying that it's very interesting to see people recast, and she used to date Kyle.
Yes.
McLaughlin, real life. So
what?
Yeah, while they were working on the show for a little while, the two of them dated.
What? You guys, this is like 20 years ago, so don't get mad at us for talking shit.
Okay, but how about the recast of Man from Another Place or, you know, arm? He's a tree now.
Okay, cool. All right, let's do it. We're just jumping around now. This is amazing. So,
I have to.
So, again, now I don't know any of these people personally. If you do a little bit of Google searching, you can see some of the things that Michael J. Anderson has said publicly over the last couple of years in regards to David Lynch. That is none of my business either way. Suffice to say, it seems like they had a falling out at some point. When it was announced that he would not be returning, obviously my first thought was, well, he's such a massive piece of the iconography. Oh. The Man from Another Place, dancing around in his little red suit. How do you do those scenes without that character? And then I went back and I rewatched the final episode of the original series. And one of the things that the Man from Another Place says to Cooper in the lodge is, when you see me again, it won't be me.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. And that did not look like him.
Oh, it certainly did not. It did not. So when he's in the second episode, since we're just jumping around now, when he sees Mike, the one-armed man, I went, oh, well, all right. I guess that would be the most obvious way. You could just, he was Mike's arm, right? You could just conflate the two and have Al Strobel play the personification of both of them within the lodge. And I was like, all right, we're going to do that. Then they walk into this other room. Here's the evolution of the arm. It's an electric sycamore with a brain head on it.
The arm is a brain.
It's like you might have lost an arm, but you've gotten a tree and a brain on top of it.
So, and there's a lot to unpack even there, because although I couldn't really tell you what that's all about, the first of all, okay, the tree.
Tree limbs, limb.
He's the arm.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You guys, we're going to be throwing around theories because the show is so crazy and I love it. All of you are crazy like I am. We're all the same, hopefully. But I'm thinking that it's alternate, you know, things that could be happening. Alternate storylines, universes. That's what the tree is for me.
That actually makes some sense, right? Because we don't know. It's the evolution of the arm, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't know what he's at. Presumably, this electric tree is not his final form, right? So he's. Well, again, I'm pulling that out of nowhere, but I'm going like, that wouldn't be my final form if I had any say in it. I wouldn't be the electric brain tree guy. But I do think it's interesting. The tree is a sycamore, right? Mm-hmm. Just like the tree surrounding Glastonbury Grove. And it's also electrified. And we saw in Fire Walk With Me how it's not, they never explicitly tell you how they do it, but it seems like electricity has to do with transporting these guys around from place to place. Like, if you remember, there were those shots of the phone poles and the wires, and you'd hear the little interference sound on the score, and you'd hear the arm doing the thing on the soundtrack. So I'm like, all right, I don't know why he's the electric tree, but at least this is comprised of elements that are recognizable in the mythology.
Exactly.
Sure.
That was the one thing in the show. I couldn't take that seriously. What about you guys?
I was just
like, no, but the tree. Like, the tree, I cannot take that seriously.
It's funny.
I was like, what is this?
I think it's supposed to be a little humorous.
You think?
I do.
It's campy.
It's kooky. They do campy stuff.
This show created campy, for me at least. And that's one of the reasons I love it so much. We got a couple new characters, of course. Bill Hastings, who is Matthew Lillard.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Love him.
He's killing it.
I just kept looking at him and I go, Bob. Is that you? Bob.
I don't think so. I don't think it's
Bob. I mean, he had a lot of Leland Palmer vibe.
He did.
Him.
Yeah, you kept saying that.
Leland on and off through the whole thing, and it's throwing me off.
Well, go ahead. No, I've got to hear your theory.
I don't know exactly what's going on here. We've seen people who have been possessed by Bob that are not behaving so animalistically and erratically as he does when he's just letting the Bob flag fly, as it were. Right. So possibly, and we saw that while Leland was possessed by Bob, would go back and forth from these moments of very frightening intensity to these moments of, oh my God, what did I do? I feel so deeply. You see it a lot in Fire Walk With Me, where he'll terrify his daughter and then sit upstairs and have this moment where it's like Leland comes back and he feels this deep, he doesn't even necessarily know what he did, but he feels this deep pain and remorse. There are moments where you can see some intensity to Matthew Lillard's performance, and then there are moments where you see some vulnerability. This, to me, is an example of, I think, what's going to be really easy to do as we get further into this show is read a lot into things that aren't necessarily meant to be read into that deeply. This is definitely connected somehow to everything else that's going on. As we saw, his wife, Bill Hastings' wife, was
Hillary Clinton. You mean
Hillary Clinton doppelganger.
Winston Churchill's cousin.
And I'm just saying, her husband's name is Bill. And
So
it's not bad that it's a connection.
But she looks a little old for him.
She was paid a visit by the Dale doppelganger, so we know there's a connection. I'm not sure that there is a possession connection, although we did see the spirit, I guess is what it is, in the cell next to Bill, or a few cells over, whose head floated away. There's definitely something afoot. I don't know if there's a possession element to Matthew Lillard's storyline yet.
Or it's just like a ghost thing?
We gotta talk about that lady head was cut off and it was like laying in the bed with man's body and a woman.
Ruth Davenport.
Yes. Well, so that ties into Bill Hastings' storyline, Ruth Davenport. So we see her kind of twisted up in the bed. Yeah. And it's a bit disturbing, but we do realize it does not look like it's supposed to look. And I think a head is on someone else's body. And, you know, we figure out all of these things that maybe, obviously, someone had to do with that. And she is put together by somebody else. And back in the days of, you know, Twin Peaks when it aired, that wasn't exactly what we were used to, putting body parts together.
Yeah, you couldn't go this gnarly on ABC in 1990.
Yeah, but now we're just breaking people apart and putting them together, and I love it. I knew that Showtime, you know, they gave us boobs, they gave us body parts putting together, so.
Well, we also get, leading up to the reveal of this body, we get this really long sequence with Ruth's neighbor talking to the police, and I'm so on board with everything David Lynch does, so all 2 hours of this was like candy for me, but I was watching these sequences going, so this is about where people who aren't on board with Lynch are going to start getting pissed off, I think. Because we're spending so much time on this weird, like, it's almost like oddities and quirkiness for the sake of oddities and quirkiness. I was on board. We did spend a lot of time with this lady. But we're following this investigation as it's happening, and I think there are sufficient details we got in these two episodes to suggest, okay, this is definitely Dark, we're calling him Dark Dale or Dale Polganger.
Yeah, yeah. Dark Dale.
How do you say that?
Dale Polganger.
Well, it's called Doppelganger. You know, I realize now that all the shows I love copy Twin Peaks in many ways.
Yeah, right, we're talking about Pretty Little Liars and how it's.
Well,
like,
I mean, I'm thinking of the Van Brothers, the CW shows, Doppelganger, but you know what? They actually created the OG Doppelganger.
Yeah, if we started listing the number of shows since Twin Peaks that have cribbed from it heavily, we would spend the entire show just doing that, probably for the duration of the run.
Which is why I love this show so much. I really love it. But the thing about the Doppelganger is that it's kind of terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys a little bit scared by all of it? Does it make you have nightmares?
No. Like me? I love scary movies. No, it doesn't make me have nightmares.
Don't ever have nightmares?
Sometimes, but
it's never about Twin Peaks, because for me...
No, it's not, no.
I've been rewatching it and the movie, and I'm like, yo, that's where I had my OG nightmares from.
Right, Fire Walk With Me is definitely more on the scary side, but the season 1 and 2, I wouldn't say I'd have nightmares from that, but it accentuated my dreams.
We'll see what happens tonight.
Yeah, what do y'all think of Beulah? Yeah. Huh? Beulah. Do you remember Beulah tonight?
Oh, wait, which one was that again?
The lady that like didn't have any teeth.
Oh, Beulah with the nice nails and the no teeth. She was living in the house where Evil Dale came, knocks the guy out. So, was it Otis who was sitting in the chair and who's drinking moonshine?
And Daria.
Yeah, and what is he, like, in charge of Daria and whatever his name was? Was it, Daria was in cahoots with?
Oh, his name.
Like Dale's bitch.
Jack. No, the other one, Ray was the other one. Jack was the third guy who they talk about, but we don't
know.
Right.
Okay. I want to see more of that family.
Let me just say, guys, bear with us. Bear with us as we, like, trek through this entire thing, because I kind of wish we could all see it at once, and then we could talk about it, but we don't exactly know what is happening. Mm-hmm. But
what I do know, though, is that when he's sitting talking to Otis, and the guy he took out outside comes back in with the gun, the way he casually just whap with his hand, and the dude's out.
Are you talking about Dark Dale?
Yeah. It's about the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Dark Dale.
Dirty Dale.
Well, Dirty Dale, Dee Dee, you know.
He was always Dee
Dee's
kind of
hot in a dirty way.
So you get to see, like, as time's gone on since the show, he's, like, even in his doppelganger form, he's just as tough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, if you get some tanner on somebody and grow their hair long, I think that's a great thing for actors to stay young. I'm just saying.
A little spray tan doesn't hurt. I've noticed that with older actors. Sometimes
you guys are looking at me like I'm crazy, but you know I'm right.
No. There's a lot of older actors that get tans, you know, to kind of like fade the lines and that sort of thing.
I loved Dark Dale, and there was a lot of stuff that was happening with him. So, can we talk about the doppelganger again, the situation, because there's him in the Red Room, and then there's him in the real world, which is, he's, like, murderous, and he's kind of, like, sexually assaulting, possibly, girls. He murdered that girl. Straight up murdered her. But we also saw a part where he saw Laura Palmer again. What did you guys think about that? And, I mean, Laura Palmer has aged, of course, the actress has aged, but in the last we saw her, we'll see her in 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And it was basically like a reenactment of the first time, right?
Yeah.
The first Red Room.
There are a couple repeated lines, and I feel like I know her, but sometimes my arms bend back is from the first Red Room scene on the original series. Yeah, I mean, obviously they all look older because it's been 20 some odd years and these actors have obviously aged, but I'm curious to see if there is an in-universe explanation for why these versions of themselves or their spirits or their souls or whatever it is that's still stuck in the lodge, why they have aged as well.
And then there was that part with Laura Palmer where she was sucked up.
After she whispers something to him.
And it was terrifying. It was so scary. And she got sucked away. And you go, oh, crap. She shouldn't have said
what,
that.
What about when she
opened her face?
Yeah, opened her face up. I mean,
oh, my God.
Pretty much.
I don't know.
She doesn't know it's her, but she does know it's her. I feel like that sometimes.
I wish I could give the answers to everybody. I wish I could be that person that could say, listen, this is what happened. But
we're going to find them out.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you guys have any input, you know, we're on the chat here. So let us know what you think.
I see, is anyone chatting?
Oh, my God. There's a few. Teresa Stewart's commenting. Charmed Original. Dave Ski.
I love Charmed Original. Yeah. They always comment on my shows.
They said, was the woman, Tracy, who brought in the coffees, Grace Sheffield from The Nanny? And then another guy answered it and he said, yeah. So
the thing about this reboot of the show, that's what I'm going to call it, is that we have so many famous people that are low-key that we have seen a million times before. And we're just there, and they're kind of like thrown in on the low-key vibe.
Right. Like, I mean, you brought up Ashley Judd before, who was in one scene in the first episode as Ben Horn's, secretary?
Yeah. Something like that.
And it's seems so strange that you'd cast an actress of Ashley Judd's caliber and notoriety to play a fairly small and consequential part. But the flip side to that is we're talking about David Lynch.
She might have a bigger role.
She may. And, of course, we've got a number of weeks to see how involved she is. But if she's not that involved, I'm just going to chalk it up to, it's Lynch be Lynch.
Mm-hmm. I think any of those actors and actresses would just love this kind of a role. I mean, it's like he very rarely does stuff, so when you finally get a chance to audition for him, I feel like
apparently I heard that there are a lot of actors that called him up and were like, hey, put me in this. So there's a cast of over 100 different people that are gonna have cameos.
Well, what's interesting too is he apparently doesn't audition people in any traditional way. He apparently looks at photographs and casts based on that. He'll look at photographs and then he'll say, okay, this person, and then they'll meet with that person, and then they just talk, as far as I know, is what I've heard about his process. So there aren't really auditions in a traditional sense.
I did work on the show as a stand-in, and one of the guys, he was got booked through a background casting service, Christopher Gray, and he told me, he played the part, the guy that was opening the garage for Dale. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
The one where he does the face mush thing?
Yeah, he massages his face.
Yeah.
He said he just was told he needed to send in a 1-minute video about himself, and that's how he got the part. Just on the phone. Just a selfie video.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he got it.
That tracks.
Lisa, I love that you were a stand on the show.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Yeah.
But not a body double, Sam.
I know. You didn't get fucked up the butt.
Sorry. We beat that? Is it
it's
too late?
It's late night. No, it's fine.
It's a Showtime show. We're good.
But I should just claim that butt.
I said it
again. That was my ass.
I said it definitely the first time. No. And Lisa goes, no, that did not happen.
I was so confused. But no.
You looked at her like.
I just said it again. But no, you stood there and then everyone else had all that happen, right?
Yeah. No. Well, stand-ins, actually, we basically do all the marks and the crew lights us and we kind of do all the rehearsals and we watch the actors and the actors watch us and then we find all the right spots and then we step out of the frame and the actor goes in and they do the role.
You're part of this.
So wait, who are you the actual stand-in for?
For a few people, for Ashley Judd, Laura Dern. Some other people that I don't think I should maybe say.
So she
everybody.
Knows the most secrets.
So you could potentially confirm or deny whether or not
We're
Ashley
not
Judd factors
make
in.
Her.
We're not going to make her do it, but
I'd almost be mad if you did.
They're so secretive. I mean, I don't know if they even want me doing this show.
I feel like you would, you know, be taken to the red room and that'd be the end of you. So that's fine. I'll be good with that. 25 years.
See you again in 25 years.
Put me down. Put me in.
So, again, about Dale, we have this entire thing and he is able to jump out. Do you guys think that I'm just confused? I'm so confused about who he's going to be. Present day and what the
is Diane still going to be around? Is he going to have his tape recorder?
I think that it's, you know, been passed. Maybe he'll I made a really stupid joke as we were watching it, and I'll say it again. 13 Going on 30 is a really dumb movie, but I love it.
No, it's cute.
Is that the one that's basically Big, but with Jennifer Garner?
Yes.
Okay.
So I got vibes of that this time. Again, Big vibes. That's a perfect example. Big. I'm afraid that he's going to jump back into the world and...
Wait, you know, there's like an interdimensional glass box with murder ghosts in it and 13 Going on 30?
Well, no.
Do I gotta watch 13 Going on 30 right now?
In my mind, yes.
Okay.
There has to be something that happens in the in-between. So I think that he's going to go back into the world and kind of be a little bit confused.
Presumably, he's missed quite a bit. Cell phones alone! Like, hand Agent Cooper a smartphone as soon as he comes out of there. His brain's gonna explode.
But, okay, I just want to clarify something with you guys. The Laura Palmer of it all, the doppelganger, I never really figured that she had a doppelganger until the very end. Until Fire Walk With Me. But what is her doppelganger? Where is she? Who is she? And how is this happening? Because I think that's going to be a very big part of this show.
Wow. Yeah, huh? Well, what about the cousin? You didn't think that was...
Maddie?
Right. Did you think that was simply just her cousin?
Yeah.
There's nothing more to it.
Ooh.
Well, I thought yes, because it was Lynch very much likes the blonde brunette dichotomy. You see it pop up over and over again in his movies. And it also, you could argue, it's a nod to like Hitchcock and also... The aesthetic of going all the way back to, it's a hardcore sidebar, but in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which of course you've got your blonde and your brunette, there's a little kid that is so David Lynchy. Go back and watch Howard Hawks Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and look at the little David Lynchy kid and tell me there's not some weird, bizarre universe connective tissue there.
I always thought the kid that lived next door to Harold in the second season lives with his grandmother that pulls the cream corn out of the...
Who's dressed like a little David Lynch.
She looked just like David Lynch.
And what did the corn represent? Wasn't it just evil?
It was garmanbosia. It's like pain and sorrow that they eat. And it looks like
corn. Corn is delicious, but I don't think... But I don't really see that. I see peppers, maybe. Peppers are pain and sorrow, not corn.
But peppers don't go down as smooth as the... Like those really gross close-ups of them eating the corn in the movie. Okay, we got to hit a lot of stuff because we're going to run out of time pretty soon.
Oh, yes. Okay, no. All right. We have the log lady, you guys. Got to talk about log lady.
Did you bring your thing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mike, you got a log.
We have a special surprise.
Has a special surprise.
Yeah, I was saving it, but I guess for our predictions. But to honor the log lady, I brought my log.
Yeah, Catherine Coulson, who worked with David Lynch his entire career, stretching all the way back to Eraserhead, who, of course, passed away in 2015 shortly after completing her scenes as the log.
What is she saying?
Make sure you watch next Sunday.
Put your hand on it.
That's right, Log. Plug that show. But seeing her, knowing that she passed away of cancer very shortly after filming her scenes, and seeing her, you know, it looks like they incorporated some of that into her character. That, I don't know about you guys, like, that got me. That was the first time that I genuinely welled up watching.
Did you?
I did. Oh. No, like, that got me. Like, I'm not ashamed. Like, that got me.
It made me think, did they come to her? You know.
What do you mean?
Like, instead of, like, being like, hey, we need you to fly out to Hollywood, shoot these scenes. I'm I bet they went to her.
They may have.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple, like, of those stories within the cast. There's been a few people that have died, and they filmed them, which is so fascinating and amazing that this show can kind of continue with that, and that it's just very timely.
Yeah, Miguel Ferrer, who played Albert, shot his scenes and then passed away.
It's a bit creepy.
Warren Frost, who played Doc Hayward and is Mark Frost's father, just passed away recently, but he shot all his scenes. But there's, we're talking about the Log Lady, and this is some stuff. This is the first thing that happens that ties into the book, and I'll save the book explanations for maybe next week's tease. But when she tells Hawk there's something missing, it has to do with Agent Cooper, and the way you're going to discover it has to do with your heritage. Mm. Some red flags went off in my brain. And then, of course, there's some business with this conspiracy that seems to be shaping around Dark Dale, who is apparently supposed to return to the Black Lodge, but is refusing to, and somebody is trying to have him killed. And it's a conspiracy that apparently involves Philip Jeffries, who was David Bowie's character from Fire Walk With Me, and then they also, on this mysterious call with someone who may or may not actually be Philip Jeffries, they reference, oh, you met with Major Garland Briggs, correct? He says he did.
And that got me. That, I love him. I love his character.
Don Davis, incredible. And, of course, passed away.
He
passed away years and years ago.
Well, there we go.
But that, too, having read the book, set off alarm bells in my head.
Well, guys, I am so sorry. I wish we could sit here all night and talk about it with you, but we can't. On that note, let's get into some predictions for the next couple weeks.
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
We got this.
Here.
Bring out that
ladies
log.
First.
What does the log tell you?
will you pass it around?
Yeah.
The log tells me Dr. Jacoby is going to have some pinnacle part in this.
Yeah, we didn't even hit on this weird random scene with Dr. Jacoby getting a shovel delivery.
It's going to be a really smart thing.
Yeah, I think he was
bearing
about three people.
Love, too, though, that he was wearing dark glasses over his colored glasses.
Signs, you know.
The log tells me that a lot of ladies are going to die before this show's over.
Man, I like too much. I'll sit here for 20 minutes and just speculate wildly. There are two more episodes that are going to be available, that are available now, right?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about those next week. David Lynch talked about this as an 18-hour movie split into chapters, and I think the first two episodes certainly bear that out. I am beyond thrilled. If you guys can't tell, I'm beyond thrilled to be back in this world. It's like I said earlier, it's like 20-some-odd years of Christmases and my birthdays all rolled into a couple of hours tonight for me. I love it. I'm real pumped. That's my prediction. I'm just going to continue to be effusive about it.
That log's excited.
Oh my god. This is so exciting. I love him. So, I think that Shelley, obviously, we saw her at the end of the episode, is going to be coming back into play. And also, who else do we see? We forgot to mention
James.
Him.
James has always been
James.
Cool.
James and always Shelley, cool. I think, maybe have some kind of thing going on.
Yeah, I want to know who Shelley's husband is, because she said that she has a daughter.
And her daughter's involved with the wrong guy, which is something Shelley herself would know more than a little about. We're going to meet their kids at some point, too. The kids of this generation of characters.
James' son was with them. Did you notice
that? Was that his son?
This kid,
I think, was British.
Oh, he looked like a little James. Never mind. Never mind.
Well, you know what? I think there are some kind of kids coming into play, like I said earlier in the episode.
Andy and Lucy's son is about 24.
Yep. There is something happening here. So thank you guys so much for bearing with us and all of our theories. And we love you all so much. And we are going to talk to you all week. No joke. Follow us, tweet at us, and comment in the YouTube comments. On that note, where can everyone find you?
Hey, you can find me at Lisa Mason Lee everywhere on the internet.
You can find me at Michael X Shirley on Instagram and Twitter.
I am all over social media at TheLexMichael.
And I'm never letting go of this log. You can find me at Sam Davidson at SamDavidsonEntertainment.com, Twitter and Instagram at SamD43. We would love to hear your theories, so please continue to talk to us, and we will see you next Sunday. Thanks, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.